This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of DreamPod by the Dreamcast Junkyard. Welcome everybody. Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever it is, what time it is, where you are. Hope that you're all well and I hope you're ready for another exciting episode with another exciting guest. But before we introduce our guest, I'll introduce you to one of our regulars. If you don't know this person by now, then I don't know what to tell you because he is amazing. It is Lewis. Hello.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. I'm feeling very amazing. Thanks to that amazing introduction.
Good. I'm glad. are you well? Are you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I am very busy because I am getting married at the end of the month. So, it's coming up fast. Yeah,
So you've been talking about it for quite some time. So it's exciting that it's finally happening.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But yeah, it's a lot to plan and a lot to figure out. You know, and
yeah. And congrats on the translation project as well. That's all come to pass, which is fantastic. So congrats on that. And obviously Derek as well and everybody in the team.
Yes, I can finally stop mentioning it on DreamPods. But yeah, for anyone, last plug, Nakaruru, the gift she gave me, we translated it over the space of 2 years. There's an article on the blog, so go check that out if you want to know more information.
Exactly. Yeah. So, go and check that out. And moving on then, it's just me and Lewis from the regular team today. But as mentioned before, we are joined by a very special guest. This person has a YouTube channel. I'm going to explain more than that. And they do Dreamcast related videos on this channel. Otherwise, it would be really silly of us to bring him on if it just did something random. So please welcome Dreamcast enjoyer, also known as Dominic. Welcome.
Hello, guys. Thank you very much for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Very good to have you. Thank you so much for joining us. And so you're a YouTuber, 2,000 subscribers.
Yeah, coming up on 2,500. I think it's nice. shot up over the last few months. I don't know why.
Well done. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think maybe, I was telling Dominic just before that, like, I think I found his videos through the algorithm. But it was a good recommendation, so that's how I found out about his channel, and I've been watching ever since.
Thank you.
Nice. Excellent. So hopefully after this episode, we can maybe get you boosted up a bit further. If all of our listeners go and find the channel, we'll obviously get you to give your details towards the end, but go and subscribe and get you some more followers and some more views, because there's some excellent content to go look at over there.
Thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you guys. Like I mentioned when we were talking just before, very, very cringy thing to say, but you guys are actually my homepage, my internet browser, because I'm one of those sad people that has a homepage. So for you to think my videos are interesting, that means a lot to me. Thank you.
Well, thanks for making us your homepage.
Absolutely. It's better than Bing. Bing being your homepage. Yeah. All right, so before we kind of go into the meat of the episode and have a chat with Dom about what he does and all of that kind of stuff, I'm going to do the traditional random question. Now, obviously, sometimes we like to ask what people have been playing, but I feel like we've not done that for quite some time, right? I think that's just something we sometimes do now. It's not very often. We like a random question, and this time Lewis came up with a question, and it is related to Dom and what he does. So I believe that you sometimes reference cozy mode games in your videos, Dom.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, So I figured, what better way to introduce you to the Dream Pod than to ask you, and also the both of us, what your Cozy Mode Dreamcast game is? What Dreamcast game best embodies Cozy Mode to you?
That's a very good question. So, when I think about like sort of the phrase Cozy Mode, I'm just meaning a game you can chill out with. Maybe it's not particularly difficult or challenging, but it's very immersive, colorful, optimistic, which is like a lot of Dreamcast games are like that. The big ones that spring to mind are Sonic Adventure, because of all the adventure feels you can potter around in, and also probably Toy Commander, similar reasons, like exploring all the colorful rooms of the house and just generally having a bit of a mess about. And Rent-A-Hero, now that I can actually play that in English, is pretty cozy.
Oh yeah.
I guess I gave you three though.
It's fine. Three is good. Lewis, did you come up with three, or have you just got the one?
I've just got the one, and I've coincidentally been playing it all day actually, and that is Napple Tail.
Of course.
Good choice.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, another like Don was just saying about Rent-A-Hero, it's a game that has become even better for people like us since its translation, you know, because before maybe you could play it a bit and, you know, you could do the platforming bits. But like a lot of the game's kind of heart is in the sort of hub world that you sort of roam around in, sort of a strange kind of fantasy hub. And it has a really, I guess, cozy kind of atmosphere, but also like I really like games that have like a nice sort of satisfying chilled gameplay loop, and this is one of them. You know, you wake up in the ice cream shop, which is where the main character stays, and you save there, and you go and you decode items you've collected, and you get parts out of them and create new things, and the whimsical characters around the world ask you to make you know, items to add to the town, and you solve quests, and it's just you keep kind of going round in a circle, and then you go to the platforming bits and you unlock more stuff. It's got that kind of really nice loop, and obviously there's got the whole game has like a really kind of sort of nice feeling throughout, and the music is just like amazing. It's like some of the best music you'll hear on the Dreamcast. So yeah, it's definitely a cozy game, I think. But yeah, what about you, Andrew?
Well, but I mean, before I get into mine, just to mention that first, it sounds very much like Animal Crossing. I've not played this game, but it sounds like it's giving off that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I might be completely wrong.
It's probably a little bit more involved than Animal Crossing.
Right.
But okay. If Animal Crossing had platforming elements, I guess. You've got like Mer-Frog Car in there. He could easily be an Animal Crossing character.
Yeah, there's a character called Mer-Frog Car.
He's awesome.
Is he a frog crossed with a car?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what it says on the tin.
He's like a big frog, and he's in a car, and when he like goes up to you, he just kind of drives towards you.
Okay.
When you first meet him, he's like stuck on the curb, and he's like, "Help, I have fallen and I can't get up." Your first quest is just to like move him.
I'm gonna need to download this now. I need to play this.
It's really good. It's such a good game. So sort of whimsical, and that's another thing Dom mentioned before about it being, you know, games that are kind of easy as well. It's not that hard either, so it's very easy to just chill and play. So yeah,
very true. And just a shout out to the Sega Lounge as well, because I was on there recently, and one of the questions in the quiz was Napple Tail, and I somehow got it almost kind of right.
Yeah.
That was painful.
That quiz was brutal, dude. Oh,
it was
God.
Really brutal. Yeah, it was brutal. But yeah, so go listen to Casey's awesome. Go listen to the Sega Lounge podcast. It's on Radio Sega or just on podcast apps. Always worth a listen. I think you've been on there as well, haven't you, Lewis?
Did badly at a quiz as well, so it seems to be a common theme.
Yes, but even though I failed it, he did send me a seal of approval postcard through the post, which was very nice of him.
Very nice of him. I didn't get one of those, so
I think it's new. You need to go on again, and okay. you'll probably get one.
Casey, have me on again.
There you go. But yes, so my cozy game, and it's probably a cop-out, and it's the answer you're probably going to expect from me, but it is Shenmue. And it's not like the main story of the game or anything, but it literally is just being able to pot around. Like, specifically Shenmue 1, there is this coziness about being in a town that Ryo is familiar with. I mean, Hong Kong's different because he's a stranger there, and it's all a bit, you know, exciting and lots going on and stuff. But the town that Ryo lives in the first Shenmue is so laid back, apart from, you know, the goings on in the story. It's very laid back. You can just go to the shop, look around, go to the arcade, just stroll around town, speak to people. You know, you don't have to follow the main quest. You can just go and do what the hell you like. And, you know, I think, you know, when I've played it, I do spend several days in the game sometimes not even bothering to follow the quest. I will just go and chill and do what I want to do. And I think, you know, it's incredibly cozy for that. It just gives you a nice feeling that you're, you know, it's just in a chill place doing what you want. So, yeah, I would say maybe a cop-out, but I'd say Shenmue.
I don't think it's a cop out. It's a really peaceful game. I like that one a lot as well. I'm just looking at the little cans of drinks and the gacha pond machines and stuff.
I think the second one does have a cozy moment, and that's the bit where after all the kind of kerfuffle of getting to Hong Kong and he loses his stuff and he get you know, he moves in with, I can't remember what she's called now, but the lady at the shrine. And you have to do the book thing. I kind of liked that. Like, if you have to like that mini game where you move the books, but that whole section feels very cozy because he's kind of like he's found kind of a temporary home for that moment, and it's like, yeah, it's really nice. So, but yeah, the first one's definitely the cozy mode. I feel like I'm appropriating Dom's term here.
I don't think I have any claim on that. I'm sure somebody else has probably said it.
Yeah, you need to trademark it quick.
Nice. Okay. I mean, me and Lewis went into a little bit of depth on our games. Did you want to, I don't know if Dom, if you want to pick one of your games and just go into a little bit of depth about why it's, I'd be quite interested to know why Sonic Adventure is cozy, to be honest.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was probably going to go with Sonic Adventure or I was maybe going to say Sonic Commander because not enough people know that one, but Sonic Adventure, because obviously a lot of people, I guess, when they think about that, and especially like Sonic Adventure 2 has this massive legacy, I think, where a lot of people, when they just think about Sonic Adventure, they're like, oh yeah, Shadow the Hedgehog and stuff, but Sonic Adventure 1's such a different energy, isn't it? And I think it's because of the what do they call them, the adventure fields, like the hub world bits, Station Square and Mystic Ruins and stuff. Those are the bits that I find cozy. Like I think I mentioned this on a video at some point, the fact that they modeled Tails's little workshop, that would have been such an easy thing for them to just kind of design for a cutscene, but then, you know, not give it any collision. You never actually need to go there in the world. That would have been easy to do, but they modeled it and made you be able to sort of climb up and have a potter around in it. And it, you know, there's not a huge amount there, but it's just the fact that, oh, I'm in Tails's house, this character who, you know, I was born in the late 80s, so grew up just playing Sonic all my life and a big Tails fan. I was like, oh, now I'm just hanging out in Tails's house. That's pretty cool. It's got a big hangout element. I think you just, you know, pottering around in Station Square, talking to the people, even if they don't have very much to say, it's funny and it's wholesome. Yeah. I suppose it's like Shenmue Light.
Yeah. I will say I'm here for the Sonic Adventure love, because it's had a bit of a bad rap for many years now. It was kind of like, initially it was like, oh, that's super cool, there's a whale, and then it was like people started hating it, and now we need to kind of get back to kind of like what Dom was doing there, where it's like, you know, they actually just modeled Tails' workshop. Like, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, there's a lot of nice detail put into this game. We should give it more props, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because everyone just likes sort of the really hypey Sonic Adventure 2. Oh, I'm grinding on a rail and like now it's Shadow the Hedgehog and I've got a gun or whatever. People seem to like that edgy side of Sonic now, whereas I still like the cozy stuff.
That's fair enough. Yeah. Don't read my write up for Sonic Adventure in Dreamcast Year One, because it does not speak kindly of Sonic Adventure.
Oh, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I mentioned on a video that I wasn't as big of a fan of Sonic Adventure 2, and I thought it was just a flippant comment, and I got a lot of hate mail over that.
Oh, really?
So, but I'm not like that.
Did you say, like, I swear you said something along the lines of Shadow is like the worst character or something like that? Oh, it made me laugh.
One of the worst conceivable characters, because Sonic himself was already meant to be like this attitude-y, edgy guy, and that was okay because it was the 90s, and then they were like, let's make him a bit more edgy and brought in Knuckles. But I still thought Knuckles was really cool, and then it just seemed like they were just trying to increasingly outdo the edginess on every installment, and Shadow just felt like it got to the point of parody for me. I just didn't like him.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I've said maybe before on the Junkyard, or somebody has said it, but it just total edgelord. Shadow is an edgelord,
yeah.
And it's just
like gothic Sonic, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only time he really worked was in 2, and then they just kind of milked it beyond that. I mean, the Shadow the Hot Hedgehog game for PS2, dear lord.
I feel like if they ever did a crossover and shoved him in like Kingdom Hearts as an antagonist, that would work, you know, if those IPs ever met. But other than that, I don't really want to see him.
Now I'm wondering what you could do, like, with a Kingdom Hearts like IP, but with Sonic, like Sonic mixed with a different IP.
Be Still My Beating Heart. What would you mix it with, though?
Oh, I don't know. It needs to be kind of Disney-esque, right? So I'm wondering. You could do it, maybe DreamWorks, but that would like be Shrek and stuff then.
I'd be here for that. That'd be pretty cool.
That's like the meme side of the internet. It's like Wet Dream right there. Like Shrek and Shadow the Hedgehog in the same game. Oh my god.
I can already imagine the deviant art posts.
Oh no.
No. Let's not imagine those.
Quick, move on, quick.
Okay, yeah, sorry. We're family friendly, please. Please, if you're imagining that, stop imagining it.
Show you what wasn't really.
Okay, so let's move on from our introductory question, and Dom, it's time for us to do a little bit of grilling of you and what you're all about, if you're ready. Sure. For that,
I'm here for it. I'm happy, more than happy.
Let's do
to
it. Cool. So I guess the best place to start is at the beginning. What's your origins? What's your origin story for the Dreamcast? where did that all begin? How did you get your first one? How did you fall in love with it?
I wish I had an exciting story for this, but it's probably the most just boring, generic 90s kid story. I just, my mum and dad bought me one, in Christmas of 98, I want to say. Okay, it was either 98 or 99. It was pretty early in its lifespan, with Sonic Adventure. I was excited, obviously, because it's a new console, but I don't think I'd grown up having the Mega Drive and then the Saturn, and then I was like, oh, there's another one. A new one of these just comes out every few years. I don't think I grasped the gravitas of it. And then when we threw on Sonic Adventure and that big whale came on, you know, I was like, wow, this is quite a unique experience. And then me and my dad spent sort of all of Christmas Day and all of Boxing Day just playing that constantly. And then I fell in love with the sort of aesthetic qualities of the console. It's I suppose in a way that a lot of people say just generically about fifth and sixth gen stuff, that there's a lot of very experimental games on there that are quite colorful and unique, you know, when people sort of start thinking about the PS2 and start thinking about stuff like Katamari Damacy and stuff like that. I suppose for me it was always the Dreamcast, because I just used to rent. We lived right around the corner from a video shop, if you remember those, and we just used to rent a lot of Dreamcast games. We'd do like a weekend rental and just got through, you know, all the big hits like Power Stone, Technomancer, Sword of the Berserk, Mac and X, all these crazy games. And every time I threw in a new game, I never knew what to expect. And coming from the Mega Drive and the Saturn, where, you know, most things were just, oh, it's going to be a platformer, or maybe it's an RPG, the variety in the games and how experimental some of them got. When Jet Set Radio came out, I'd never seen anything like that before. So I suppose, yeah, that's my origin story, if you like. I just, the console bowled me over by how unique it was and how kind of varied the library was. And I just don't think that's been paralleled since on any other console, really.
Yeah, it's, like I say, it's a familiar story, because so many people have that, you know, especially people who came from previous Sega consoles. They kind of have that thing, oh, I just got it because it was the next Sega console, but then got kind of blown away by it. How old were you when you got the Dreamcast, do you remember?
So I was born in 88. There you go. That's an insider scoop for you. So I would have been 10 then in 98. So yeah, 10 years old. Probably the perfect age, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's really cool about the rental store. It sounds like you got through some sort of deep cuts there, like Technomancer and Mac and X. I mean, they're not that deep, but like they're not like the, you know, when there's like these lists online, they're not like the first games to come up. So that's pretty cool that you were able to experience some of the kind of, I suppose, you know, to use the generic term, hidden gems. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was actually a lot of my dad's influence. That my dad was such a cool guy. I remember sometimes he'd just come home and he'd be like, I remember when he got Sword of the Berserk, and you know, if you're worried about a 10-year-old playing Sword of the Berserk because you've maybe read the manga, doesn't have any of the super dodgy content in there. It's a little bit gory, but otherwise it's just a beat 'em up game. But you know, he came home, and my dad, if he ever got a game that was higher age rating, he'd always play it himself to check the content before showing me. But he played through Sword of the Berserk, and then he's like, oh, there's this game, and it's like this 7-foot-tall knight with a massive sword, and he just fights these like zombie bad guys, and it's really cool. I think you'll like it. And I was like, wow. And that's how I got into Berserk. So a lot of the time, my dad had just come home with esoteric and strange games, and we'd just play
them. Nice. Nice.
Did he let you play Dead or Alive 2 at 10 years old? with jiggle physics?
I think the age setting was on 0, so we had no jiggle.
No jiggle. Okay, yeah. That's fair.
Do you remember the age slider on that, where you can...
All the way up to 99, because apparently at 99, you like them jiggly. As jiggly as they'll get.
At 99, it becomes unplayable, because everyone's just... it gets very surreal.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, with that then, obviously you were 10 when it came out, so it didn't last very long. So I guess you were still quite young when it got discontinued. Do you remember the discontinuation? Did it matter to you at the time, or did you just move on to the next thing?
I don't think I really understood the concept of something being discontinued, particularly because, like, we still had the Mega Drive in the home. We still had the Saturn in the home. So to me, like, those things hadn't gone away. It's just that, oh, no, I'm playing this thing. So I still had the Dreamcast in the living room until I was maybe 15 or 16, and then it went to the attic, and then it moved to the attic in my new house, and now it's here. So it's just kind of followed me around. I suppose I realized, oh, there's not new games coming out for this anymore, but I'm just one of those people who just replay games. So we got a PS2 and, you know, had a lot of fun with that as well. And I suppose, yeah, I was sad that there didn't seem to be any Dreamcast stuff coming out, but I don't think it ever dawned on me until I got older and got more online that, oh, they literally just stopped it.
Oh. That's fair enough.
You mentioned that you had the Dreamcast and it kind of went up in the attic.
Yeah.
And obviously you kind of got on with, like, the PS2, you know, all the other things, you know. Was there a moment after that, you know, so many years later, where something clicked and the Dreamcast came back to you, I suppose?
Yeah, but I don't want to be super sad and bring the tone down at all, but it was when I lost my dad, which is a few years back now, so I'm certainly not going to, like, make the podcast all gloomy about it, but during, you know, remembering fond times with my dad, because he was a great guy, I loved him very much. One of the things that really sticks out is we just played a heck of a lot of Dreamcast games together.
Yeah.
And I suppose that one of the driving things for getting that back out was, like, that's a good way to sort of remember those times. And then it, you know, in the process, like, oh, actually, regardless of nice memories, these just really stand up as, like, very solid games.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, you know, we'd just gone through a time there around 2008, 2009, 2010 when games were kind of generally seen as being a bit of a rut with the PS3 and stuff. It's not like there weren't any good games, but there was a lot of very westerny military shooters. Everything was very grey. And
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that, like, there weren't any good games in that time, because you still had, like, I think Borderlands is pretty good, the Batman Arkham games are good and stuff, but there wasn't anything where I had that kind of Blue Stinger or Toy Commander or Sonic Adventure moment of being like, wow, this is what I've been waiting for. So I became a bit disillusioned with games, and then later kind of whipped out the old Dreamcast again and was like, wow, this is where it's at. We should just not have progressed past this as a society. This is where we peaked.
Yeah, we needed those blue skies very much, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it took a while for it to get back there, I think, as well, other than the odd indie game.
So, I mean, I guess that leads us to how you got started with the YouTube channel. What inspired you to kind of start doing Dreamcast stuff on YouTube?
Oh, this is a little bit of a random story. I was cat sitting for my mum. My mum had gone on holiday and said, will you come round for the week and, you know, just kind of live in the flat and feed the cat? And I was like, okay, but I'll need something to do. So I brought my Dreamcast with me. I was playing a lot of that. A lot of us work from home these days. So I just had my work laptop and this really rubbishy headset mic, you know, just for doing Teams calls. And I one evening, just after playing some Dreamcast games, I was like, I should really write, try and sort of jot down some thoughts on why I think this is so unique. Maybe I could post it on a blog somewhere or something. And I ended up writing this bit of writing that became a video called the Dreamcast Aesthetic, which is remains my most popular video at the minute. And the recording quality on that is diabolical, because I literally just, I had this script and I had this, like I say, terrible work headset. And I just sort of recorded myself reading the script, wrote and threw a few Dreamcast soundtracks behind it that I recorded on a phone. So I didn't know anything about recording quality at that time. But it's, you know, it's a very authentic summing up of my feelings around kind of the what I like about the aesthetic and what I like about, I sort of characterize the Dreamcast as a very positive and optimistic console. A lot of the games that came out really have a very upbeat summer holiday vibe to them. And I think I just wanted to talk about that. And then I was amazed at the amount of response I got from it. And then I thought, well, I'll just carry on doing this then if people like it. And I'll use a better microphone next time and learn a bit more about how to make it sound good.
So did that particular video, because you said it was your most viewed, did it get picked up by the algorithm? Like, was there a moment when you were like, oh, wow, what's happening here?
Yeah, so I put it up, I think that one's from like October last year or something, and it got about 30 or 40 views. And I was like, yeah, it seems about right. I'm talking about something very niche. I didn't really expect that many people to be interested in it. And I just happened to check back in January. Like, I was still putting out a couple of videos here and there. I just happened to check back on my YouTube in January or February or something, and it had like 30,000 views, and now it's like got 53,000 views. So it just seems to have fallen into the algorithm, and a lot of people are checking it out, which in a way is great because it's good exposure for the channel, but in a way it's bad because the sound quality is terrible in it. A lot of videos are like, please get a better mic.
I mean, you could re-record that now. I guess you could redo it with all the current equipment you have. That might be something to...
Remaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do a little re-release on it.
Director's cut, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Dreamcast Aesthetic DX.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be good. So, I mean, obviously that's your most popular video, but what are your favorite videos that you've made?
I think just the stuff where I'm trying to like really plug big memories from my childhood that nobody seems to get. So I'm one of those people where, you know, when you like a band or a film or something and your mates just don't seem to get it and you're like, but why? This thing's wonderful. That's what I'm like with Blue Stinger. So I've got this video called Blue Stinger is the most underrated game of all time, which is like, sounds like an ironic, hypey title, but it's my genuine opinion. I really do think it is. Like just this wonderfully crazy off the wall, whimsical game, and no one ever seems to talk about it. So I think that one is one that I'm pretty proud of. I did a half hour deep dive into D2, which I was pretty happy about, and recently did one about Phantasy Star. So they're the ones that stick out to me. But if I was gonna go and tell anyone to just check out one video, I'd say Blue Stinger, just because I want more people to know about that.
Yeah. Did you play that game like right when it came out then?
Yeah, I was right in the pocket for that. As soon as it came out, I think it came out around my birthday, and that was my birthday present for that year, because I think my dad was like, oh, you know, you like Resident Evil, you'll like this, we'll play this one. And obviously for anyone that's played Blue Stinger, it's absolutely nothing like Resident Evil. That was completely I think it was really mismarketed. not in Japan, but I think over here a lot of games magazines were like, step aside, Resident Evil, there's a new contender. And you know, when you play it, it certainly isn't trying to be a new Resident Evil. It's just this absolutely wacky B-movie with all these odd anime tropes and a billion weapons, and just it's a really funny and upbeat game, but yeah, it's not Resident Evil. It's not trying to be either.
In your video, you said that you played the Japanese version. Like, I'm familiar that this Japanese version is different, but I've never actually given it a go myself.
Oh yeah, it's considerably different. So initially when I got it, it was just because it has different camera angles. It has fixed camera angles, right? Resident Evil. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. Like it's interesting enough that I always just replay this game at least once a year anyway. I may as well give it a look in this new dimension. But also in there, there's like different dialogue in certain parts. So there's a part where Janine King references Peter Pan, there's a part where when Elliot's climbing up a wall, I think he says something like, I'm just like Spider-Man. And I assume those are things that got cut for maybe copyright reasons. Right. And then there's also a few unique assets in the like in the Hello Market, which is one of the early game areas when you're at. It's just a big Don Quixote superstore, basically. And when you're on the top floor of that, in the European release, I don't think it says anything on the floor, if I remember rightly, but in the Japanese version, it says specially place, which I assume means like special place or special offer or something. But I think when the localization teams got hold of it, they're like, oh, that doesn't really make a great deal of sense in the native language. So we'll just cut that out and replace it with a generic texture. But it's just interesting to find stuff like that.
Yeah, just to sort of jumping off that as well, there's quite a few of the videos I quite liked from you were ones where you kind of look into like sort of obscure Japanese games, and one of them was obviously Doraemon. That was quite an interesting little deep dive. Like, do you enjoy like sifting through the library to find these kind of obscure games? Just, are you quite into that? I get the impression you are.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for enjoying that video as well. I'm glad you liked that one. I suppose when I first like got my Dreamcast back in the day, I realized the library was really good and really varied, but I never realized how big it was. And then as I got older, and obviously you can get the internet, I was like, wow, a lot of games just never left Japan, but they look awesome. Mm. And when I saw that Doraemon one, I was like, oh, he's not a character I know a lot about, but he's quite an iconic look. You know, this cute little sort of fat blue cat. I like his design. I was like, oh, I'd like to play a little game where you play as him. So I just got hold of that one. And I was like, wow, this is a really strange game, because it almost feels like it's trying to be Shenmue and Paper Mario, and also it's got some mini games in there, but also it kind of feels like it isn't finished. But that is fascinating. I want to talk about it.
That's it. Like, I think that's kind of what I gravitate to with the Dreamcast. That kind of, I suppose, that potential. Doraemon's funny because, like, especially in your video, you point out that when you can go in this like 3D mode and walk around the town. But like, it doesn't really add anything, because when you get to like, say, the entrance to somewhere, you have to open the map and go on the map to go to the new place. So it's like there's the 3D mode almost kind of doesn't need to be there. It's definitely like they've obviously ran out of time or budget or something. So
it's one of those DIY elements, though, that like if it appeared in a FromSoft game, people would be like, what does that mean? What's the lore behind the fact that he can't travel and he has to fast travel? Does this say something about the nature of the human soul? You know, but obviously, yeah, it seems like they just ran out of time or money, but it's still a really cute game. I like just checking out random stuff, because there just seems like a massive wealth of Japanese games and ones that haven't been getting translated. But Lewis, I think you drew a plug on the on that Samurai Showdown spin-off, The Gift She Gave Me.
Yeah.
That looks incredible. I'm gonna check that one out. So that's what I like, is when, you know, the community, the Dreamcast community, seems still really strong. You know, someone just comes out and is like, here's an English patch for this 20-year-old game, like for Rent a Hero, like you've done for The Gift She Gave Me. I love that, because then it's like, oh, I can get it and I can enjoy it in more or less the intended way. I can understand the story. So I think that's a really cool aspect of the community.
Nice.
So I'm guessing that you must have a modded Dreamcast to play all these different games, or do you have a modded Dreamcast, or do you buy all these games legitimately?
No, I do buy the games legitimately, but then I will tend to run the ROMs on ReDream, the emulator. And the simple reason for that is because it's easier for me to record. I don't know much about technology and capture cards, so if I can just run it onto my computer screen and record it, I'll just do that. But I don't support piracy. I support owning the actual thing.
Nice.
So do you have quite a big collection then, I guess?
Yeah, I do. And it just sort of sits in a little quiet corner in the study and just grows every time I have a few quid in my pocket, which at the minute is not very often, but you know, it used to be more often.
God, here's a random question. What's the last game you bought?
What was it?
I hope it's something really weird and obscure.
It was something Japanese. And do you know what? I think it might have been Frame Grind. You know, the FromSoft mech fighting game where it's kind of a medieval mech game. Yeah, I think it might have been that.
Oh, nice. That's another one that's been translated. Like, it's, yeah, so, yeah, we owe it to the community for that.
Absolutely.
But nice, nice. I also have another question. Sorry for the on the spot.
No trouble.
We sound more professional on the pods that go out than we do in the moment. But I just because we're talking about, you know, obviously your videos getting picked up by the algorithm. Like, what? How's like the reaction from people been, and how, you know, how has that been good? Like, have you had a lot of good feedback and a lot of good conversations with people, I guess?
Oh, yeah, actually, so that's been a real eye-opener for me in terms of just how kind of far-reaching the community is, because I'm always aware of kind of, you know, specialist sites like yourselves that focus on these things and keep it alive. I think that's really cool. But I always wonder how far-reaching it is, because when I'm playing video games with my friends, some of them still like old school stuff, so I can still maybe convince them to play Power Stone or Soul Calibur. But, you know, none of them have any major nostalgia for the Dreamcast, and I always think, like, am I the only one? But I'm obviously not. And yeah, when I put the videos up, so many positive comments where people are like, wow, you've just unlocked a memory from my childhood, or sometimes people will just give me a random fact about a game that I didn't know. And just it's been a really cool way to connect with people. I would say 95% of the comments have been positive. There's been a few weird ones where, like, someone didn't like that I don't like Shadow the Hedgehog, or in one video I said that I think racism is bad, and I lost a few subscribers over that because they said that I was being an extreme Marxist leftist, and I just thought racism being bad is a pretty standard view, but apparently that's quite niche. That's quite a hot take, apparently. But on the whole, it's just been really genuine, lovely people just talking about their childhood or the memories they have with these games, especially the Phantasy Star Online one I just did. I never got to experience that online back in the day because we had this terrible modem that wouldn't do it. But I played a lot of it offline, and I was just talking about my experiences with that. And the amount of people that were like, oh, we still run like a private server, you know, come and jump on our server and have a go with us so you can experience it online. And that's just really nice. You know, it just feels like a very welcoming community on the whole. So yeah, we've had some great conversations out of it.
Excellent.
That's awesome. That's very cool. I mean, the Dreamcast community overall is such a welcoming community, I find. Like, you know, I was fairly new to it. I mean, I've been in the community for some time just as an observer and a lover of the Dreamcast. But when I kind of came into it from writing the book in like 2018, 2019, it was quite amazing how quickly people take to you and just want to introduce you to all the cool stuff and are kind of happy to hear, you know, your thoughts on stuff. So yeah, it's awesome that you've had that experience with people as well. And, you know, the 5% of people that have left weird comments, well, it's just the internet for you, isn't it?
That's just YouTube, isn't it? That just happens.
Yeah. I think the community is very, I suppose, is kind of humble, and obviously, like we say, you get the odd weirdo, but like overall it's like very humble, because we're here championing a console that failed, you know, like, yeah. You know, we've all got to be a little bit kind of rooting for the underdog. So I think we're all a little bit kind of hopefully very nice, and, you know, we're all quirky in our way. So yeah, it's a good community. I love interacting with it and, you know, being part of it. So yeah, it's good to hear that you've got lots of good feedback and people sharing their memories. There's a lot of that in the Dreamcast community. Mm-hmm. I think that's half of why we're here, right?
Yeah, it's such a little window of nostalgia, because I believe it did exist for such a short time, but I think it was such a pivotal time, late 90s, early 2000s, where there was just so much, I think, general kind of goodwill and optimism around in the world at that time. The Dreamcast really embodies a lot of that, and I think a lot of people like talking about it, which is, it's always nice to hear. I always love reading those comments.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, like, what's next for the channel then, Dom?
I mean, I think I've fallen into a groove where I kind of do a couple of short videos, like just maybe more standard game reviews. So I'm planning on doing a Mac and X one soon, and a sort of the Berserk one. But then I'll do some bigger deep dive ones on, just a topic like an aesthetic or something. I really want to talk about, and I haven't quite worked out how I'm going to do this yet, but I really want to do a video about the sort of culture around weekend rentals. Like I was talking about at the start of the show, rent and stuff with my dad, because I just think, I don't know what the modern day equivalent of that is. And I guess it's something like having a PSN subscription where you could just try out a bunch of games for a nominal fee. But there's just something really special on like a Friday afternoon, you finish school and you in my case, my dad's like, let's go to the video shop and we'll get a film and we'll get a game for the weekend. And, just trying to decide what to get. And then it was interestingly hit or miss, because you're stuck with that all weekend. And sometimes you're like, wow, this is one of the best weekends of my life. And sometimes you're like, why did I rent? Oh, I was trying to think of a hilariously bad game.
I was going
to
say, did you have, what are the games that like you got stuck with in that regard, the bad ones?
I think I fell out of favor with like Quake 3 Arena, which a lot of people, love. Ooh, that game. Yeah. But coming on the back of Quake 1 and 2, which was obviously very like single player focused, and I didn't do a lot of multiplayer stuff, even with my friends or even with my dad. We'd just kind of do couch co-op, passing the controller back and forth and blasting through single player. So when that Quake 3 came out and it was all just multiplayer focused, it's not a bad game by any means. It's a really cool game mechanically. But, I was kind of sat there and like, well, this is my weekend just battling bots on Quake 3.
Right, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah. See, that's a game that even is pretty fun split screen. But yeah, I think if you were just doing it like battling bots, it might get a bit boring.
Yeah, we only had one controller. So I think if we'd have had two controllers, or if I'd had a friend come around and bring theirs, it'd have been a different story. But it was just essentially just me sat in my pajamas battling bots and feeling a bit like, oh, I probably should have rented something else.
Well, that's a cool idea for a video. I'd be very interested to see that one, because like we were saying, it's like, the fact that you were able to experience games like Mac and X and Tech Romancer, Sword of the Berserk, like that's pretty cool, because I think if you were, I guess, spending all your hard earned on like, buying a game outright, you're probably going to go for something a little bit more, like the big hitters, I suppose, rather than those kind of under the surface kind of games.
Yeah, exactly. So like today, obviously I'm not no longer spending my parents' money. I earn my own money, but I'm still very careful about, if I'm going to buy a game, I almost obsessively research like, will I enjoy this? or something that I know, is just a shoe-in, like Sonic Frontiers, of course I'm going to buy it. Or I recently bought that Virtual On Japanese collection for the PS5. And I was like, well, I'm obviously going to enjoy Virtual On. But yeah, going back in the day, if I'd have been in a shop and thinking, am I going to buy Technomancer? I probably wouldn't have paid full price to experience that, but it was a great thing to rent.
Yeah, and you also talk about Sword of the Berserk, doing a Sword of the Berserk video. Yeah. So here's my question. Have you played the super in-depth fan translation that like lines it up with the manga, because you said you're interested in Berserk? So
yeah, so I am aware of that, but I haven't actually checked that out yet. So what I was going to do, because I'm just familiar with the sort of vanilla Sword of the Berserk, I'm just going to kind of base my video around my experiences with the vanilla version, but I'm either going to take a look at the fan translation as kind of an appendix to that, or maybe as a totally different video and talk about some of the big differences, because I am really interested in that. The reason I wanted to do the European version or the Western version is because I want to talk about the voice actors on there, because it's really interesting who voices who. Because as I grew up and started watching the 90s anime, and I like the guys that do the voices in that. And then when I went back to play the game, I was like, oh, I'm sure it's probably the same voice actors. But no, Guts in Sword of the Berserk is voiced by Michael Bell, who is Raziel from Soul Reaver. And then Hook, the little elf, is voiced by Cam Clark, who is Liquid Snake from Metal Gear Solid. So it's just this bizarre cast of voice actors that are all doing a great job. And I thought I could get some mileage talking about that kind of weird esoteric thing that I like to dine out on.
Yeah, when that undubbed translation patch came out, I think we tweeted it out like, could this be the definitive version of this game? And people were like, no, we need all the voices. That was important to people. quite like to return to that topic, actually, that we did, you know, a few episodes ago, and obviously you did a whole video about it, like games that you know, have the Dreamcast energy. Like what are your like favorite non-Dreamcast games that embody the Dreamcast energy?
Yeah, I do think the indie scene's been really integral on bringing that back. I have a massive wish list on sort of Steam of games that just appear to have a vaguely Dreamcast-y aesthetic, or like share some similarities. So like one I was really excited about in the last few years was Solar Ash by Heart Machine, mm-hmm. which is very Jet Set Radio-y if it was a, you know, space adventure. I don't know if you guys have played that one. That's a very cool game.
I've not played it myself. Have you played it, Andrew?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Hyper Light Drifter. And Solar Ash is very cool. And I'm very excited for Hyper Light Breaker because it seems like it's taking the best of Hyper Light Drifter and the best of Solar Ash and kind of melding them together, which is very cool. So
I didn't know about that one being in the works. I'm excited for that one now.
Yeah, it's like it's a 3D Hyper Light Drifter essentially. So it's kind of taken that 3D inspiration from Solar Ash, and yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting.
I'm excited about it now. Yeah, now that I know about it, sounds cool. So I've got a couple of those. Solar Ash would definitely be on that list. And also, are you guys familiar with Aragami at all? By Lintworks. It's really sad because they only did two of them, and now Lintworks have gone I think into liquidation. Now I don't know if they're gonna
say they're closing, which is very sad.
It is, because Aragami 2 made a couple of missteps by going a bit more realistic and a bit more online and stuff, but it was still a decent game. But Aragami 1 is very that was a moment for me. I think that came out in maybe 2016, I think. That was a moment for me where I got that game on a whim because I was like, oh, it says something about ninjas. Maybe it'll be a bit like Tenchu. And I was like, oh, no, this actually feels a lot more like it could have been on the Dreamcast. Like if the Dreamcast had an answer to Tenchu's Stealth Assassins, it would be Aragami, because it's got the kind of Jet Set Radio cell shading look. Everything's nice and clean and round looking, but not super detailed. So very, very fifth gen, sixth gen in that Dreamcast pocket. All of the missions are divided up. It's just 10 short missions or 12 short missions. It's a very modular game. I like that one a lot. And have either of you guys played Astral Chain on the Nintendo Switch?
Oh, I'm very familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, gameplay-wise, that's not Dreamcast-y at all, because it's another one of those platinum games, super difficult character action things, which I don't necessarily love those games, but the aesthetic of that game and there's a big Hangout vibe. So for anyone that's not familiar, it's kind of a futuristic, policey anime Ghost in the Shell kind of a game, where you take on the part of a rookie cop who's joined the special team to fight these weird monsters. But a lot of the game is just pottering about in the station, talking to your colleagues, getting weird side quests and gossip, and just Shenmue-ing it up, you know. And that one for me really feels Dreamcast-y. I'm sure there's a ton more. Like I say, my Steam wish list is kind of full of games. I came across one the other day called Boomerang X, and I'm like, could this be a Mac and X reference? And then when I've looked at it, it's a first-person game where you throw a boomerang, and it is quite sixth-gen-y looking, and I'm like, you think it could be Mac and X? So I'll let you know when I buy it, you know? So I'm always on the lookout for that. I think the indie scene's been really integral to bringing that back. Like Devolver Digital have been great. High Hell is another one. I'm just rambling at this point, guys. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You've reminded me of something which I'm not sure if we've mentioned here before, but if we have, I apologize. Have we mentioned Slave Zero X at all? Does anybody know about that?
No.
Ooh, now the name does ring a bell. I think it might be one of those in the wish list. But I can't for the life of me place exactly what it is.
Yeah, so obviously Slave Zero was a game that it was a PC game that got ported to Dreamcast, right? So
it was Infogrames, was it? I played that one. Big mech running around. Yeah, it was cool.
Exactly,
game.
Yeah. And there's actually a sequel to that, which is Slave Zero X, which is coming out soon. There's a demo on Steam at the moment for it, and it's like a 2.5D game. So obviously that's just a direct sequel to a game that exists on Dreamcast. So it's not like it doesn't quite fit into the things that are the kind of Dreamcast-y. But when we were talking about that kind of stuff, I was like, oh yeah, this game exists. It's like, you know, Dreamcast people should probably be aware of that.
Absolutely. And if that's not in my wish list, it will be shortly after this, because I'll go and look it up. Because, yeah, I really enjoyed Slave Zero. I felt like that was an underrated game. There was a few of those weird PC ports for Dreamcast that I felt were underrated. Hidden and Dangerous and Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah, love Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah, it was a great game. And it wasn't necessarily optimized for Dreamcast, but I felt like it ran great. And, I really liked that one.
Yeah. I mean, being able to dismember people with your gun and shoot them so their guts come out. I mean, that's basically like a teenager's dream, right?
Yeah, it was. I was right in the pocket for that when it came out. I was just starting high school and I was like, yeah, this is edgy. I was, you know, listening to some terrible metal bands. Not to ride on metal. I still listen to a lot of metal, but I don't listen to whatever terrible stuff I was listening to in high school.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground, a lot of stuff, and I'm excited to myself go and watch some of your videos, and hopefully a lot of our listeners will go and kind of watch those as well. So but they need to know where to go. So the next thing is, where can people find your amazing YouTube videos?
Oh, thank you. Well, they're all just on YouTube under Dreamcast Enjoyer, just a very, very simple name. That's what it says in the tin. If you enjoy the Dreamcast, hopefully you'll enjoy that channel. I'm not on any of the socials. I had an Instagram for a bit and considered getting a Twitter, but decided against it because I'm terrible at keeping stuff updated. Whereas I find if it's just all in one place, it's just all on YouTube. And then you have that like, little community section on YouTube where you can post updates. So I'll be like, oh, playing this game today. What do you guys think about this one? You know, so I have that little way of like interacting with people who subscribe. But I just wanted to say as well, thank you to you guys for having me on. Like I say, I'm a big fan of the Junkyard, big fan of the work you guys are doing, and following some of the guests that you've had on. Like I was saying before, Lewis, you interviewed Ross Kilgareth, who did Harley Quest, and Andrew, you've interviewed one of my favorite people in Jörg Tittle, the guy I'm very jealous of because he was friends with Shinya Nishigaki, who did Blue Stinger. Yeah. And I just think following, you know, those kind of really talented game devs that kind of probably a lot of people have heard of, and you're stuck with me today, but I really appreciate having the chance to chat about it.
Don't listen to Dom. His videos are great. Go check them out.
Thank you very much.
I think so many people, I think this, it goes back to the community thing, right? There's so many people who do so many varied things throughout the Dreamcast community, and every single one of those things is valid, whether you're translating old games, whether you're creating new games based on Dreamcast properties, whether you're talking about the Dreamcast or making videos about old games. It all kind of feeds back into the community in some way, and you know, either brings new people in who then also love the Dreamcast, and then feeds into the dev scene and homebrew and indie games, and it all just feeds into everything. So I think, you know, everybody has their place and everybody is kind of on an equal footing, I would say. So yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on, and you know, stand side by side with other people we've interviewed. Absolutely.
Thank you very, very much.
Awesome. You've said you don't have any of the socials, which is probably a very wise move. Lewis, you have some socials though, don't you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at LewisJFC. Follow me on there to hear me make bad jokes and then promptly delete them because I got embarrassed like 2 seconds later. Yeah, you can follow me. But follow the Junkyard, which Andrew will plug.
I will. So you can go and follow the Junkyard on Twitter, which is the DC Junkyard, at the DC Junkyard. We're also on Facebook. We have a lovely community over there headed up by people like John. So please do go over to the Dreamcast Junkyard group page and share your memories there with everybody, with the 16,000 odd people who love the Dreamcast over there. So please do go share your memories there. You can also join us on Discord, where there's a lot of lively chat and banter going on about all sorts of things Dreamcast related, sometimes not Dreamcast related as well, but by and large Dreamcast related. So check out our website, thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, where you'll find a link to the Discord, and also of course our blog. So please do take a read of the blog. We've got some excellent things. For instance, the to speak of Jörg Tittle again, we've got the C Smash VRS review that Brian has written for us, which is excellent.
It's a good review. Yeah,
of course, and a bunch of other stuff as well which we've had recently, which is great. We're also on YouTube as well as Dom. Maybe don't release as many videos as Dom does, but I think, are we just the DC Junkyard there as well?
Yeah, I think if you just search the Dreamcast Junkyard, we'll come up.
I was just going to say that I really enjoy some of the stuff you guys do. Sorry to put you off, but some of the like tech demo-y stuff, like that, just things I never would have thought to cover, like that Tower of Babel tech demo, and just some of the like weird esoterica that you've covered on there, I find really fascinating. So it's well worth a follow. I'm just trying to give you a plug.
Thank you. Yeah, I do say people should check out Kev's recent video, which is just like such an out of left field thing to talk about, but that's what I love about the Dreamcast. There's always something to talk about, and it's the NBA and NFL 2K games in Japan had like Bible editions that came with like these big booklets, and he just has a look at them in this video. It's like, I never knew about them, but it was cool to hear him talk about them. So yeah, that was a good video. Nice one, Kev.
Yeah,
that sounds cool.
People need to prod Kev a bit more to do more videos, I think. I know he's busy, but more videos, Kev. We need more videos. so that's where you can find us. You can also go to buymeacoffee.com/DC Junkyard if you want to throw us a few pounds or whatever your local currency is to help us buy more VMU batteries. But in seriousness, that does go towards running the site, kind of upkeep costs and things like that. It's unfortunately not free to run the podcast, to run the website. There are a few little costs involved. So if you want to help us out with that, then buy us a VMU battery. We would be very grateful, because apparently we can pay for all of our bills using VMU batteries. So please do go do that if you wish to. You don't have to, but it would be lovely if you could spare us a few quid. And finally, you can also follow me if you want to at oddmint84 on Twitter. I'm sometimes there. I've just deleted it from my phone today to stop myself from doom scrolling, so I may not be on it quite as often, especially as Elon seems to like to mess it up. I think didn't the app go down or something today? It just stopped working, I believe. It's just like,
I was madness. Busy playing Napple Tale and not scrolling my phone for once, which is something I probably do too much.
Didn't he like remove everybody that hasn't been active in about 30 days? So I think I did make a Twitter account at one point. It won't exist anymore because he'll have just wiped it from existence.
I think he's like still Elon on there. Yeah.
Oh, am I? Yeah. I don't think I've ever posted anything. I don't think I ever will either, but I think it's there.
It was quite funny, like we surpassed 10k followers on Twitter, but I put in my blog post about it, like, if he's deleting inactive people, maybe we'll lose, like, immediately lose them. But it doesn't seem to have happened, so okay. I don't know if he's kept that promise up or whatever, but yeah,
hopefully so. Not because congrats on the 10k guys.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're nearing 11k, but thanks to Aaron all the way back in the day who set up that Twitter account. Yeah.
All right, so I think that's everything. I've covered all the bases, and yeah, just give us a follow on any of the things that I mentioned, and yeah, feel free to drop us a few quid for a VMU battery if you fancy it. And yeah, we will see you in the next one. Thank you very much again, Dom, for coming in and chatting with us. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it's a pleasure, all mine. Thank you very, very much for having me on. It's been lovely.
Thank you. And everybody listening, have a great rest of your day, I suppose. Or if you're listening to us before you go to bed, have some pleasant dreams. Keep on dreaming. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers. Please stop this disc now.